As we come to the end of 2023, it's time once again for us to chat with some of the chief executive of the UK's and the world's largest sight loss charities. Today, we are joined by Elena McGregor, the chief exec of British Blind Sports. Elena, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Alan.
It's reflection time and crystal ball time then for British Blind Sports. We're going to look back at 2023. So just pick some of the highlights, maybe even some of the challenges of this year.
I would say it's been one of our busiest years for sure. I'm sure you know, because you've been so fantastic and so supportive, that you know one of the key highlights was the IBSA World Games in the summer, which was truly amazing and hectic all in one go over a 2 week period. It was crazy times, but something I will look back on very fondly.
A huge global event which British Blind Sport were instrumental in bringing to the UK, and as a charity you kind of promote sport and leisure for blind and partially sighted people of all abilities. You know, this was more kind of bringing an elite level sports event to the UK.
It was, and our objective was always, very early on, we talked about, you know, we want to showcase the sports and the capabilities, not disabilities. And, you know, we ensured that we had people with sight loss who were helping shape what the event looked like. But we really didn't want, as we would call it, any sort of pity for our athletes. It was more that we wanted them to be awesome and outstanding, and people go, wow, that's amazing. And I think I knew the athletes could do that anyway, if I'm honest, because, you know, they're fantastic. But I wanted Joe Public to understand that. And I think we pulled that off really well.
You had teams from around the globe coming, a multitude of sports there, including some Paralympic qualifiers as well. But also within that, a chance for, you know, the public or anyone just to come along and try some of the sports out for themselves, maybe spark an interest for them, and just show people that pretty much any sport can be adapted for someone who is blind or partially sighted.
That was a really big part of our role as the National Disability Sports Organisation. We wanted what we called the activation zone. So it was on throughout the games, and it was really so that people could come and try different sports, be they people with sight loss or without sight loss, family members. Some of even the athletes came, which was quite fun actually, on the Athletes Village. Some of them would come and try a different sport, some that they'd never tried before. And ironically, I now know of two people, a man and a woman, both of whom are elite athletes, but are now looking at doing another elite sport as a result of coming into the activation zone. So that was really exciting for us. And I think what I really liked, you know, for a personal highlight, was my whole team was there, and it was a hard slog for the team to be delivering that on a daily basis throughout the games. And yet they worked as a dream. They were the dream team, actually, and they supported one and each other. And you know, it was just lovely to see how British Blind Sports staff have grown and how the games helped them grow. And I think we are, you know, we're quite a formidable bunch now. And the passion and the appetite for wanting to change public opinion and also to provide new opportunities has never diminished. I was worried because the games took so much out of us personally. We all worked so incredibly hard that I thought we might have some exhaustion and apathy afterwards. And we were, by all means, all of us were exhausted. But that passion has not diminished at all.
And you've had the Have a Go days running through the year as well, you know, introducing people, mm-hmm. again, of all ages and abilities to different sports and activities. You've no doubt had the fundraising stuff going on as well. So, you know, that was mm-hmm. obviously the big event for the year, but, you know, the day-to-day stuff goes on.
Yeah, we, you know, still business as usual. We definitely were rolling out our Have a Go days. We've just finished one recently, actually. We had our swimming gala, which was fantastic. Over 30 young people coming to participate, and the number of young people actually having swimming lessons when they were there as well. That's really important. You know, but our Have a Go days, post-COVID, there was a little bit of reticence from our community to attend anything where there's, you know, close physical contact. And we've worked really hard to build confidence and reassure people. And this year we have actually seen, I mean, we saw people coming back in 2022, but 2023, our numbers are back up again. And it's exciting to give people that sort of, you know, first dip in the water, really, to trying sport and hopefully then carrying it on for life. And we follow up 3 and 6 months later after people have been to our Have a Go days. And, you know, there is a very high percentage. I think it's, I hate to give out figures if I'm not 100% correct, but I think it's around about 70% who have never done sport have then gone on to keep continuing to try sport. So encouraging them to get to that have a go day in the first place and see that sport doesn't need to be scary is a really strong message that we need to push even more so next year.
Some of the charities I've been chatting to with Lena have talked about post-COVID again, you know, changes in volunteering, you know, people perhaps being a bit more reticent to volunteer or perhaps having to use more volunteers or bring in more volunteers to help with the services. There's been a cost of living crisis as well, which has impacted some charities again to a different level. Is that something you've seen through 2023?
I've just been doing some research really about volunteer behaviour because it has dropped post the games. And what we're seeing now is people are not necessarily committing to long-term volunteering posts, but they'll dip in and out and maybe help at something like a have-a-go day, but not necessarily perhaps want to be a guide runner where they're running with somebody week on week. So it's looking at those behaviours and doing some work again next year is to establish why that's happened and what we can do to make a difference. I have to say, for the games, we had over 500 people apply to volunteer, and then we had just over 400 volunteers actually throughout the event. And we had such good feedback, and all of them had done some basic guide training. So the legacy of the volunteering post the IPSA World Games has been fantastic for us. And you know, we can't achieve these sort of events of that scale, and also things like have a go days without our volunteers. But you're right, volunteer behaviours are changing post the pandemic, and it's really trying to understand what they are and then tap into how we can utilise them at best for everybody. I do believe volunteering has to be a win-win. You can't just expect people to do something for nothing without them getting something back, and whether that's just a nice feeling or some development or some actual training and some recognition for what they've done. But volunteering needs to have that tied to it. Otherwise, somebody might do something once, but they'll never do it for you again.
So crystal ball time then, I suppose a little bit, but looking to 2024, what do you see the challenges being, or what are the perhaps big events or big tick boxes on the horizon?
I think that the challenge is the cost of living. We all talk about it as a charitable organisation, you know, and I meet with other charities and how it's impacting on us. You know, funding is harder to seek, but we've actually got to go down to the core of who does it really impact. And it's ultimately it's our membership. It's people that want to get in sport or have a desire to, you know, just try. But the cost of travel, the cost of equipment. So it's how do we manage our services in a way that we are still cost effective and they're not running at a loss, because then there would be no British Blind Sport. But how do we manage and offer services to improve opportunities for people at as cost effectively as we possibly can, if not free, in order to encourage people to stay fit and healthy? Because we are British Blind Sport, but from my point of view, you know, sport, as I've said before, is the springboard for social impact, growing confidence and people's mental well-being. And post-COVID, we've all been affected, our mental well-being, and sport is more important than ever. I think that's the challenge. The things I'm excited about is that we do have some fantastic legacy post the games, and we've had some investment from West Midlands Combined Authority, from UK Sport, and recently the Primary Club, and that's to develop a Showdown League. Now, Showdown wasn't really even a sport in this country even 18 months ago, and we helped a group in Croydon put together a team and actually represented at the games, which is fantastic. But we're going to be rolling out a national league, and that's going to be hard to identify where we put the tables, how we support these people. But how fantastic to develop and grow a sport that is a sport that is specifically for people with sight loss, and it covers a whole age range, and it doesn't have to be at an elite level. So I'm really excited about that. We're also helping Goalball develop three clubs in the West Midlands. And then also, bizarrely, you know, we had to park some of our stuff to go on with the game. So we're reintroducing First Steps, and later next year, we'll probably be reintroducing See My Voice for young people and young volunteers. So, you know, it's exciting and challenging times ahead, but always good.
Next year, you've got European Football Champions coming up. You've got the Paralympics coming up as well. Do you see an increase in interest from people round about these kind of events?
Yeah, you will always see an interest, particularly around the Paralympic Games, but it's actually sustaining that interest. That's the important point. I joked when we had London 2012, I wonder what phone call we'll get most of next week when the Games happened. And we actually had 82 phone calls asking, could they be a guide runner? So, you know, we know for a fact that that those sort of events bring more interest into disability sport as a whole, not just blind and partially sighted sport. But it's what we don't want to do is overpromise and underdeliver. So, we have to be ready for that. So when we get those phone calls, whether somebody wants to be a guide runner, wants to take up one of the para sports, that we can actually then put them in the right pathway and in the right direction to be work to doing it locally, and then hopefully if they're really good, then to do it elite. Most people will never be an elite athlete, and that's whether you have a disability or not. But it's about participating in sport. The one thing that we don't want to do is close doors on people and say, well, you can't do it. And we have heard that. We've heard that over the years that I've been here. I remember, and I won't name the sport, but somebody had actually said to somebody with sight loss, sorry, we don't deal with your problem. So changing perceptions is going to be an ongoing thing. Obviously, I spoke to that club and showed them that the person didn't have a problem, they had an impairment, and actually this is how you adapt the sport to help that person. And that person went on to be fantastic at the sport and enjoys it very much at a local level. So, these big events help change perceptions, but we've got to change perceptions from the ground, from the bottom up, to really make a difference.
Just finally then, Elena, a personal moment for you then through 2023, what would you say is the standout there?
I always go back to the heart of what we do. Obviously, I've had some very good personal moments for me, but I was at the goal ball at the games in Coventry, and there was a little boy who was partially sighted sat behind me with his mum and dad, and just seeing him enjoying the games was amazing. And I just happened to turn to one of my staff members and said, well, should we give this little boy a first steps pack, which is a pack that we do for young children for early intervention? And she whispered back, because we were trying to be quiet, I'm on it. It's already done. And that was a lovely moment. Lovely to see that little boy enjoying it. Lovely to see his parents enjoying it as well. But also to see that my team were really working hard to engage with people. And then another moment was actually at the closing ceremony. And I know you were there, Alan. And there was a lady sat next to me who was blind, who'd been volunteering at the games. And I asked her, how did it been? How had she ever volunteered before? And et cetera, how had she enjoyed it? And she said to me, I didn't know I could volunteer when I lost my sight. I didn't think I could be useful, and I've really loved the games, and now I know I'm valued. If ever there was a moment in the whole of 2023 that made me want to cry, it was that moment, because we should all feel valued regardless of what disability or impairment we have. And knowing that we'd made that difference to that woman, then the whole of the games was worth it for me.
Elena, if people would like to find out more about British blind sport, then what's the best way to do that?
The best way to do that is to look at our website, which is www.britishblindsport.org.uk, or email us at info@britishblindsport.org.uk, and one of the team will assist you, whatever your query may be.
Well, Elena, everyone here at RNIB Connect Radio and RNIB would like to wish British Blind Sports, all the staff, the volunteers and the customers as well, a very Merry Christmas, a Happy New Year, and look forward to chatting again in 2024.
Alan, the RNIB have been a fantastic support to BBS this year. We've been doing a fantastic project called See Sport Differently, and you personally have been so supportive. So thank you to you, to all the staff at RNIB, and to your membership. And we wish you a happy Christmas and a fantastic 2024 too.